Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to another edition of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro, and with me, once again, is Greg Karam. Greg, I'm not going to put you through an opening question this week.
I appreciate that. Those are always torture.
Instead, we will once again go into the email bag for what I hope is our last session of who was the greatest Irish national football team player of all time. I'm hoping. This has now been running for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think I started this.
But it is from Alan, who is our Scottish Mets fan in Norway. He's very shocked and disappointed when I confuse him as being Irish, which is fair on me because I seem to recall making fun of Rob for thinking that like Denmark and Sweden were the same country when he traveled to Scandinavia a couple of years back. But he decided to weigh in anyway. The best, and you see, he's taking it as the island of Ireland and going with George Best. And like, look, if I was including Northern Ireland, obviously the answer would be George Best, one of the greatest players of all time and from any country. If you mean to stick to only Southern Irish players, like this is some funny like UK thing where they call it like Southern Irish to be obnoxious or something. I think you guys hit the nail on the head with Roy Keane. George Best was Northern Irish, so depending on the question parameters, you could answer differently. Yes, Northern Ireland, George Best. I think we agreed on Paul McGrath for regular Ireland. Republic of Ireland, I want to be proper. Seemed to be the consensus over Roy Keane. I don't want to get into British politics. Of all the things we're not qualified to discuss on this show, British politics may actually be ahead of like managerial and field staff decisions.
That's for sure.
We're slightly more qualified to discuss the Mets winter meetings tango over the last 24 hours. Of course, the supposed deal with Ben Zobrist, it seemed to be a sure thing about 36 hours ago. Fell through. He signed with the Cubs for 4 years and $56 million. The Mets turned around this afternoon and traded John Neese to the Pirates for Neil Walker. Greg, you were feeling a little blue last night. Can you walk us through your angst and anger?
Okay, well, when I heard about the... First of all, when I heard that he didn't sign with the Mets, I was obviously disappointed. I was a big supporter of the Mets signing Zobrist for obvious reasons. And then it leaked out that he only signed for $456 with the Cubs, which is less than a $15 million a year AAV. And I just thought it was hysterical that the Mets' highest number one priority, they couldn't woo him away with some more money than less than $15 million a year. Now, I know that he said proximity to home was an issue. Chicago, 7 hours from Tennessee, or Nashville, Tennessee. So proximity, like, that's the stuff that they say afterwards, after they've signed the deal. And look, I don't doubt that if they had equal offers, he would choose Chicago for the reasons that they've stated. But if I'm the Mets, and this is my number one priority, and I don't have a B plan, which is what they were leaking at yesterday, though obviously they did have something planned, You can't bump up the offer to, you know, $8 million over that or whatever to enough to woo him away. I mean, since this guy's last contract, you give him $8 million more dollars, he's probably gonna come your way. They always go to where the money is.
Perhaps you might be right there. Ken Davidoff is reporting today that the language around what the Mets have said about what they offered Zobrist is very interesting to me. Now, look, I mostly retweeted the Gersh to personally annoy you this afternoon.
I know.
But the language from Davidoff was that Zobrist agent thought they would go to 4 years and $60 million. Not that they offered that. It's been reported that the Giants definitely had that offer on the table. And with the caveat, that is a lot farther from Nashville, Tennessee, and they probably haven't played mostly corner outfield. And even the Mets are like, well, the language that Rico used specifically was, we felt like we were there financially, which could mean anything. And it's not like they were secret. Right. They didn't like back channel leak out. Yeah, we offered him 460. And he turned it down to go to, you know, the warm, loving embrace of Joe Maddon or whatever.
Right. Because if they had made the celery salt offer that was, yeah, if they had offered more than what he signed for with the Cubs, you can sure as shit bet that would have gotten leaked out.
Yes.
Because they do that kind of stuff. I mean, they always trying to make themselves look better by leaking stuff out into the media, and sure, they have plenty of sources.
And, you know, there's always sort of a bit of a lag time for these leaks, too, because stuff happens so quickly at the winter meetings. Like, yeah, they could be talking to someone who has, like, day-old information, which apparently everyone did, because this was signed Monday night, and all Tuesday the Mets were basically taking a victory lap through the media. So,
yeah,
which I think adds – it does add to sort of the annoyance about it, because they've – and I can probably say this now. They thought for a long time, even before Tuesday, they had Zobrist in the bag.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, shit happens. So how disappointed are you?
Well, I'm disappointed. I thought that there was a chance that they were going to add payroll and just kind of put forward a roster that was really just going for it this year, next year, the next couple of years with this pitching that they have, which we can see, given the market, how much of a surplus value they really have there and how not that much more money would put this team over the top and make them an overwhelming favorite, especially in the NL East, and then also make them competitive within the entire league. So I saw a quote recently that they were dropping the fight, you know, flexibility line again. And I was laughing. I was like, oh, that's funny. I thought that was a thing of the past, but it's still here. It's still here that they couldn't go and get their guy in Ben Zobrist. They didn't have the money for it. That seems to me to be the biggest reason that they couldn't get him. And here we are again. You know, they have a $96 million payroll. You know, they just kind of flip salaries with this Nice Walker deal. And you already have Rubin leaking out that they're only going to go 1-year deals for the rest of the guys that they're going to do get to fill out this roster. So I'm frustrated about the money. And I think it's fair to be frustrated about the money because, look, to New York market, I spend money to go to the games. I actually just got a package this year. I got a 20-game package. I'm spending money for the team. It's time for them to spend some money on the team. You know, let's make this team better in this market. You got to spend some money. Come on. I mean, because at the end of the day, somebody's profiting from this money. Because there's money in the game. You can see that. You know,
there's always money in the banana stand.
Yes. So somebody's profiting at the end of the day out of all this. And we know who it is. And I'm just saying, you know, let's put a little bit back into the team. It's time.
Yeah, but Barwis needs new squat machines, Greg.
Is that a thing?
I mean, I can't get into it. I mean... Zobrist would have been – look, I'm not – if they had signed Ben Zobrist, that would have been a good thing. Ben Zobrist is a good baseball player that makes them better in 2016 and probably 2017. And past that, who knows if they're going to be able to afford the arb raises for their pitching staff or what else is going to be going on with that organization financially or competitively or otherwise. But when it fell through, it was like, not the end of the world, assuming there was a plan B. And then there's immediately, like, Adam Rubin's tweeting out, and I talked to someone an hour ago, they said there's no plan B. No, obviously, yeah. Deals can come together pretty quickly because everyone's there. And I imagine they've been at least kicking the tires on Neil Walker all along. You know, we had an email about it on the show a few weeks ago because there was rumored interest even as far back as then. So they may have had some vague parameters in place, and perhaps losing out on Zobrist caused them to speed up the process a little bit. I mean, obviously, caused them to speed up the process a little bit. And in a way, Neil Walker does give them a bit more flexibility. You know, not positional flexibility. I'm not talking about payroll flexibility. But it allows them to sort of hedge for 2016 to a certain extent. Because as we'll get into when we talk about the trade specifically, Neil Walker is a very similar player to Daniel Murphy in so much that they're a rather sure thing to be, you know, like a 50 to 55 regular. League average to a tick above player.
Yeah.
They get their value in different ways. You know, Walker's more of a secondary skills guy. Murphy's more of a batting average guy. Walker's a little bit better defender, but he's not a good second baseman or possibly even an average one defensively. And does not offer the same positional flexibility that Zobrist would, certainly, or even probably Murphy. Walker played multiple positions in the minors, has been pretty much a second baseman, only at the major league level. You know, could he pop over to third in a pinch if Wright gets hurt? I think they'd probably go with Wilmer Flores in that case. They have a little more depth at shortstop.
Walker hasn't played third base since 2010.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Flores has more recent experience there, probably more total experience there if you include minor league stuff. It involves then not playing Wilmer Flores at shortstop, which seems to be the plan A right now. So, and then you can give him a qualifying offer. You're not on the hook for multiple years with this guy who's, you know, turning 30 this year. Like with the older Zobrist, you know, that could go. And yeah, you could do other things with Zobrist past this year if you still believe in Herrera, or you could have signed Zobrist and use Herrera as a trade chip, that sort of intermediary piece between, you know, Steven Matz and Ahmed Rosario that we've talked about. You know, does Herrera and a rehabbing Zach Wheeler get you a very good starting center fielder or a shortstop upgrade? Probably. You might be able to pull something together. The pitching market's so screwy right now. Like, Zach Wheeler having Tommy John surgery tomorrow might bring you something good back at this point.
It's crazy. But, you know, trading for Walker just kind of shifts the need to another spot. It takes it away from second base, which wasn't a huge need. I mean, it wasn't like a black hole. They have Herrera there. They have Flores that can plug in. I'm just saying now you got to go out and get a pitcher. And they're linked to Bartolo, but again, I don't know. I mean,
apparently there's a burgeoning market for Bartolo. Because, I mean, fuck it.
Yeah,
Mike Pelfrey just got 2 years and $16 million.
If you don't bring him in, the market after that is pretty thin. So,
and they're not going to be, I mean, there's still good arms out there, but they're not going to be in that end of the market. So yeah, I guess I'll phrase it this way. Would you be more comfortable going into 2016 with Ben Zobrist at second and John Neese as your fifth starter, or Neil Walker at second and Logan Verrett as your fifth starter in toto?
I'd probably more comfortable with Zobrist Neese.
Right. And I think, look, if you can...
I mean, I don't know what Verrett's going to give me at the end of the day.
Yeah, you don't. And Rico's right on WR right now as we record, talking up, you know, Rafael Montero, Logan Verrett, and Sean Gilmartin is the fifth starter.
Oh, no.
That's a fair reaction.
Sean Gilmartin, I mean,
that's like the most bizarre one to be. Well, I figured they'd stretch him out in AAA next year, because why not? But yeah, he's not. Do you remember, like, Aaron Laffey? That could go Aaron Laffey really fast.
And Montero, you never know with Montero. The guy's got the shoulder.
Threw 28 innings this year, hasn't thrown a pitch anywhere since August 20-something when he took himself out of a rehab start complaining of shoulder pain and was sitting 88 to 90. Let's tap the brakes.
Oh, boy.
And past that, we're literally talking about, like, Seth Lugo, Matt Bowman, and Gabriel Yanoa.
Right, and then if you throw one of these guys into the rotation, then your depth beyond that, you got nothing. And they just came off a year where they had basically historic health success, good health.
Well, that's going to have to happen again anyway. Because look, no matter what they did this offseason, given the financial restrictions, and all Neil Walker does is plug that hole, it's possible he'll be a little bit better than Daniel Murphy as a total package. But you're not replacing the 20 home runs down the stretch from Cespedes. You get Conforto, Darnell, and Wright for a full season, theoretically.
Yeah.
But this team rises and falls next year with Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Mats. So even if John Neese is still there, one of those four guys goes down for a half a season or a full season, they still have a very large problem. So I'm not so worried about where they're going to fill those 32 starts.
All right.
Look, they signed Bartolo Colon, awesome. They signed Yusmeiro Petit, sure, great. Yeah. If I get to write about Luis Sessa for the Yankees top 10 at BP, Jesus Christ.
I don't think... Oh, yeah, he just got
traded there. I got to go back and look. My list.
I don't know if he'll make a top 10.
He made it for the Tigers. That's the worst system.
That was a bad system.
It is a bad system. But the back end of the Yankee system isn't that great.
I thought it was better these days.
But... It is better these days overall. But like past like Jagiello and like Rob Refsnyder's on it. So I got to stop giving out spoilers.
Yeah,
I'm up front in like 2 weeks. where was I?
I don't
Something
know,
about John Neese, probably.
Yeah.
And look, that's a good fit for Pittsburgh. He's basically J.A. Happ, and you just give him to Ray Searidge and hope that he waves his magic wand and, you know, a fast two-seam cutter, defensive shifts, better defense behind him so he's not pouting and giving up unearned runs.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing about Neese is that he's had a pretty good career. And last year was a little bit of a down year, but if he goes back to what he's done in the last 3-4 years, that's a pretty good pitcher, and he's got two options left. There's 3 years of control there.
Up to, and they can also cut bait if it goes bad, so.
Right, right. So, you know, it's not like they gave away nothing. And, you know, if you had gone out, let's say, signed Zobrist, you still could have flipped Neese for bullpen piece and maybe a prospect.
Right,
and
if you want to use, like, the Wade Miley model, which seems to be popular on Mets Twitter, you know, sure. Get like a top end potential.
I'm not even talking about Carson Smith. I'm saying like somebody good.
Carson Smith is good.
No. I'm saying he's better than what I would even expect to get back.
Right. So but I mean, you get that top end with your back. Yes, but I think this use of Neese is better because it plugs a clear hole in the lineup, which I think is going to be a little bit more important.
Right. My issue is that you could have just thrown money at the problem.
Yes. Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, that's the story of every topic we've ever had on this podcast about the Mets since January 2013 when we started.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm frustrated.
So Neil Walker. Yeah. 1 year, 10-ish million in arbitration probably. Switch hitter. A little bit of a platoon split. Steamer next year projects him for 18 home runs. And a 263, 330, 436 slash line. That's pretty Murphish.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's more secondary skills, which is technically a little bit more valuable. But, and he's a better defender at second, though not a great one by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
He's like fringe average, which is still an upgrade over Murph.
He's like a slightly better bat with like slightly better defense.
It's
an upgrade.
Yeah. He's been roughly one-ish. One half to one win better than Murph each of the last few years by Baseball Reference's WAR, which is literally a wash. He hasn't been quite as durable as Murph. I mean, he played 150 games this year, but prior to that, it looks like, you know, your standard DL stint plus a game, you know, a rest day here and there in 2012, 2013, and 2014.
But he's pretty poor against left-handed pitching.
Right, but they have plenty of right-handed infield options with platoon issues.
Yeah.
So I'm not, he's almost a better fit in that way. Though so was Murph. So they didn't platoon him ever. So
yeah.
I don't know how much you want to bet on that, as it were.
So as a switch hitter, I wonder if they've ever tried to just have him stick to the left side.
Yeah. I think there's still value in he's probably a better right-handed hitter against lefties than he is a left-handed hitter against lefties just because of experience things.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean,
and again, it's he's not awful.
His career numbers are not awful.
It's a big split, to be sure. But it's not significantly worse than Murph. He still gets on base at roughly an average rate, so you can kind of fudge it. You know, if you're going to give him a day off, you do it against a tough lefty, for sure, and play Tejada there or whatever. And try to get sort of his, like, empty batting average OBP against lefties.
Sure.
Into the lineup, and, you know, whatever, bat him eighth. And that's fine. But, you know, he's not a guy you have to... He's not unplayable against lefties.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And he's a nice player. It's not a long-term commitment. He wasn't... He had a down year this year, relatively speaking. But if he gives you something more like his 2012-2013, was a little better than 10% above league average as a hitter, second baseman that can, you know, play. I mean, I say he's not a average second baseman, but he can play second base. He can play a major league second base.
Yeah, you're hoping for a good year so you can drop a QO on him after the next year.
Sure. A nice player, you know, 25 doubles and 15 to 20 home runs.
Yeah, he's a good player.
And he certainly fits, I think, the Mets' front office preferred type of bat because he both gets on base and hits for power.
Sure, yeah.
So that's one down. Now, where do they go from here?
Well, they got to, I mean, you have, I, in my opinion, you got to bring in this fifth starter.
Fifth starter, okay. Who would you target?
I would target Colon.
You're in Bartolo?
Yeah, that's the type of guy because I want a guy who's going to be flexible later in the year if Wheeler comes back and that kind of thing.
Hey, you know, there's another rotund Latin pitcher that has experience moving back and forth from starter to reliever and swingman out there on the market, in case you weren't aware.
Give me a break.
Well, he's good.
He's okay.
He's been at, okay. You want to look at the last two seasons of Petit versus Colon? Because we can do this. We can go to Baseball Reference.
He was mostly a reliever last year.
He was. I don't understand. Because Bochy wanted to start Ryan Vogelsong. It's the only reason. So his ERA plus the last three seasons, 97, 94, 103.
That was Petit?
Yes. So I'll give you, as a San Francisco Giant, we'll call it 3 years. It was really 4 years. We only pitched like four innings in the majors in 2012. As a San Francisco Giant, 245 innings, 3.66 ERA, which is 97 ERA plus, 3.25 FIP if you're into that. Almost a 5-1 strikeout to walk ratio. He strikes out a batter an inning.
All right.
I can do math. Yeah, he strikes out. He's an above average K rate. Look, he's going to be a little homer prone, but so is Bart. I'm just saying, you get him for 1 year and $3 million, probably.
You know what? That's probably the way they go.
Yeah, it didn't take how long to sell you on. I'm very good at selling people on Yusmeiro Petit, I found over the years.
Well,
it's one of my usable and marketable life skills.
Once you bring it back to cheapness and money,
that's how it always works.
It's a good sell. I mean, Bart's going to want some decent money.
Especially in this market.
Yeah. I mean, the guy...
I mean, would you... Okay. I know he's 42 or whatever. Though John Heyman is now reporting that Bartolo... My main man, John Heyman. Reporting that Bartolo Colon appears likely to return to the Mets.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
This makes me happy.
I'm saying...
And I'm not even a big Bartolo fan. Like, I wasn't a big fan of him last year. But he's just... He brings a levity and a lightness to it, and I like that. And he's not bad.
And you can pencil him in. Like, there's value in being a below-average pitcher for 190 innings, especially on this team.
Yeah, he's given constructed. Last 5 years, he's been pretty reliable, taking the ball every fifth day. So sign me up. That's a perfect fifth starter.
Even considering age, and I think Bart's, what, 42 next year?
He turns 43 in May.
Okay, so it's his age 43 season. Would you rather give 2 years, $16 million to Mike Pelfrey or Bartolo Colon?
Ew. Oh, no.
I'm serious. Who would you rather give it to?
I know.
I don't fuck around on this podcast.
He's 43, though.
It's
23. He's probably got a surgical, like he's got a brand new shoulder probably when he went to Germany a couple years ago.
And
So,
they just spun the blood cells around his elbow or whatever.
yeah, I can't watch Mike Pelfrey pitch anymore. It's got
I'd
so it's got to be Cologne.
say reasonable stance to take, I feel like.
Yeah, at least he's having fun out there.
So what do you do about center field then? Let's say Bart comes back for 1 year and 8 million. That puts you at like 104-ish.
So I tell you what they're gonna do. They're probably
Gerardo
gonna
Parra.
go out and get like Will Venable.
Will Venable. I actually kind of like Will Venable, but. Hey, there's
Well,
a. I tweeted this out, but there's like Jake Cave in the Rule 5 draft tomorrow.
is he a center fielder?
He is. He is a definite
Really?
center fielder.
Really? I looked him up the other day. I didn't realize he was a center fielder.
Yep. He's a left-handed hitter,
That wouldn't.
if that floats your boat.
Well, all right, you're talking me into him.
Yeah, I mean he's played some other places as well, but he's played mostly center field for his minor league career. Yeah, he got a taste of AAA last year, so he's not wildly, he's not some A-ball dude. He didn't know. Look, he hit
I mean, he doesn't
269.
really,
He just
yeah.
hits for no power. He's got some speed. He's basically a fifth outfielder. He's your Kirk Nieuwenhuis replacement. But he's probably a better defender in center and a little more speed. If you want to go really cheap.
Yeah, but Kirk Nieuwenhuis is probably better than this guy.
Probably.
Yeah, he's come on. This guy slugged 345 in double A last year. If Kirk was in double
Yeah.
A, he'd probably slug 750.
304, 366, 402 against righties. In double A and a little bit of triple A, granted.
But the problem is
I mean, I think he gets picked. He might not make it to the Mets pick.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true too.
But again, this is we're ha having this conversation. It's stupid because this is not a team where it is set on the
Right, you shouldn't be
expectation
relying on
curve to
the
be like
rule five.
spending a 25-man roster spot on a outfielder, and you want to pick up a reliever or whatever. But
And they're not going to get par because he's not going to go for a 1 year deal. You think he's going to go for a 1 year deal?
no, I don't think so. I think they'll eventually give 2 years to either par or spot, but.
Well, par left-handed.
Gerardo Parra?
Yeah.
I believe so. That's something I feel like I should just know, because I feel like I've looked at Gerardo Parra's baseball reference page 1,000 times. Yes, he's left-handed.
Okay. Not a great center fielder from what I recall, but.
Again, he sort of falls into that not great but playable.
Well, if you can get him that cheap, then that probably fits the mold.
Because he's cheap.
Because he's cheap. This is the market in which we deal. We are a small to mid-market team.
There's your Mets winter meetings in a nutshell. Now we'll answer your emails. Before we do emails, we do housekeeping. It's the Mason Avenue Audio, episode 163. I don't think I said that at the open, but it's episode 163. Our second season, if you will. Mason Avenue Audio is the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Mason Avenue. Find us on the internet at amazonavenue.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Amazon Avenue, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/AmazonAvenue. You can find the podcast on iTunes. Just search for Amazon Avenue Audio, and you can listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. Also find the podcast on the Stitcher app. Download directly from blogtalkradio.com/AmazonAvenue. Listen to the embedded player that goes up in the podcast post at Amazon Avenue proper. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. My co-host this week is Greg Karam. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Karam. That was the housekeeping. These are your emails. You can email the podcast at podcast@AmazonAvenueAudio.com. And we'll finish off Alan's email, like all our Irish footballing emailers. He has a Mets question as well. Since this is a Mets podcast, can you please give me your opinion on who will have a higher combined WAR this season? I assume he means combining FanGraphs and Baseball References WAR, which is a weird way to do it.
That's
I
not
always
bad.
like talking about more sort of more holistically, but fine. This season, Michael Conforto or Curtis Granderson, assuming full seasons played by both players. I hope that Conforto grows to the extent this year that he becomes the most valuable overall Mets outfielder in 2016. Is this realistic? Thanks. Still love the podcast. Alan, the Scottish, he underlines it, fan in Norway.
Michael Conforto has tremendous upside.
He has tremendous upside potential, yes.
Yes, but Granderson is coming off like a 5-win season.
Well, I'm going to just say that I'm guessing. I don't know how the metrics will play it out, but I think they're probably both slightly above average defenders in a corner. Like 5 runs better in a corner than average.
Interesting.
Well, I'm just trying to sort of gauge it because corner outfield defense gets so weird based on whose other teams are sticking, you know, what vaguely immobile person.
Yeah, how many innings it's like Jason Hayward's playing in right?
Right, the average baseline there could be a little wonky. But I think we don't. Neither of them throw great. Conforto's a little more athletic than Granderson in a weird way. Granderson's probably a little bit better with roots.
And
reads
instincts
and stuff like that. Conforto is a very accurate arm and got a lot and derived a lot of his value from, you know, base runner kills and the like. So then you really sort of turn it to the bat. You know, they're both lefties with platoon splits, or likely to have platoon splits.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't really know yet, but probably lefties with platoon splits, advanced approaches at the plate, and 20-ish home run power. You know, 20 to 25 home run power probably like as soon as next season.
Yeah, they're similar.
It's tough for me to sort of. If I had to set like the over under for their war next season, which is kind of a silly thing to do, assuming like 140 to 150 games of playing time, however you want to gauge what constitutes a full season. I'd say we use 3.5 wins.
Yeah.
3 or 3.5 wins.
Yeah.
Where I set the over under.
Oof. That's tough. If Conforto played over 130 games next year, I would take the over.
Well, see, I think you just can't extrapolate out his stats from 2014 or 15.
You have to
play him against lefties. You have to regress.
Right. He's going to play a lot more against lefties. But I don't think he's going to embarrass himself against lefties.
I don't think he's going to embarrass himself. You know, if you want to look at it, I'll do a quick little.
I also don't think Granderson's going to be as bad against lefties next year as he was this year.
He was pretty brutal.
He was, but I just don't think that's who he is. The last like 5-6 years, he's not been that bad against lefties.
Sure.
He also, I don't necessarily agree that he's going to maintain the defensive value that he carried this year.
Right. I mean, he's only a year removed from being below average. I mean, he was slightly below average by DRS, brutal by UZR.
Mm.
But just for the record, take a quick look. So if you just look at their performance against righties last year, you know, Conforto was an 870 OPS guy. Granderson was an 890 OPS guy. So again, it's basically looking at it, it's about 40 points of on-base percentage for, sorry, about 30 points of on-base percentage for Granderson. And what's that? I have 340 and whatever. It's Granderson had more on-base percentage. Conforto had more slugging. I don't think there's a lot to split the baby here. It's going to come down to health, and it's going to come down to performance against lefties. And that's even meaningful, like in a 1-year sample size.
Yeah, and wonky defensive metrics.
Now, I guess we could phrase this better. Who do you think is going to be the better player in 2015?
Is that not what we were just trying to
answer? No, we were doing wonky war things.
Oh,
about the eye test here. Watch a baseball game, Greg. Who's going to be the better player in 2016?
I'll go with Conforto
too.
I think he's got tremendous upside. I think he's going to be really, really good. And not to say
If
that
you could
Granderson, I just don't think Granderson's going to be as good as he was
Right.
last year.
If you told me a Matt finished top 10 in the MVP voting next year, I would guess. I mean, it's likely that, probably most likely that none of them will. I guess I could see one of the pitchers. But if you told me a Mets position player finished
Yeah.
top 10 in the MVP voting next year, I'd probably pick Michael Conforto. That's who
I'd
I
pick
guess.
Travis
Darno?
Darnell.
Yeah, I just
Yeah.
don't think catchers are tough because they don't play enough.
Yep.
Darno is a reasonable choice as well, though.
Thank you.
Our next email is from Rob, Jeffrey, and the gang. I agree with the argument against trading Harvey under the assumption the depth of starting pitching in free agency this offseason would prevent the Mets from getting full value for Harvey. However, Price, Greinke, Zimmerman, Samardzija, Lackey, and the immortal J.A. Happ have all signed. You forgot Pelfrey. Leaving basically Cueto, Kazmir, and less attractive options like Giovanni Gallardo. The Cardinals and Dodgers are both clearly looking for starting pitching. It seems probable that at least one of the two will be unable to sign a top-line starting pitcher. Assuming this happens, you foresee either or both making a strong play for Harvey or some other Mets starter. As a million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase famously said, "Everybody has a price." At some point, the Mets have to listen on offers. What would a compelling Harvey to the Dodgers package look like to the Cards? Excelsior, Rob. Addendum. He sent this in like,
Oh,
yeah, after the Shelby Miller deal. Shelby Miller for the top 10 prospect, a major league ready outfielder, and a top 75 prospect. Dansby Swanson is not a top 10 prospect. Please apply the transitive property. We'll say you've got a top. Again, I gotta stop. Let's say you got two.
Spoiler alert.
We're doing like list stuff right now, so I can't grade it. So for the purpose of this discussion, we'll say a top 10, a top 75. I think the average comes out the same anyway. Please apply the transitive property of prospect analysis to your answer below. Thanks much, Rob. So what was the? I think you have actually you have a marker for this now, right? Because of the rumored Jose Fernandez asks.
Well,
And the Diamondbacks one or the Marlins wanted, was it Swanson, Blair, Inciarte, Corbin, and somebody else?
sure. Yeah, I heard Corbin was in there too.
I mean, no, I don't know if the Diamondbacks would do that. They might be the one of the few teams that would, but I would be hard pressed not to trade Matt Harvey for that package. Now, it's a little bit different for the Mets because they're in a different spot than the Marlins are in terms of sort of their competition cycle.
A Matt Harvey package today
Yeah.
would have to be a lot better than
A Jose Fernandez
what.
package, really, you think?
No. Similar to a Jose Fernandez
But a
package.
lot with more major league ready players. I mean, you're getting Inciarte and Corbin. And
Inciarte is, I mean,
Blair's
he's good.
basically major league ready.
Right. What I'm saying is, I got to get more than what the Braves got for Shelby Miller. Like, there's got to be another piece in there. Corbin's nice. If you look at the team that does match up well, would be the Red Sox, but they'd have to be willing to part with one of their younger stars, and I don't think they're going to be willing to do
Yeah,
that.
Mookie Betts is a
But
two-sport threat now.
if is bowling a sport?
We're not going to get into that. That's going to open a whole other can of worms in the podcast. He didn't bowl great on the Viper today, though. That's a tough pattern. I struggle with it as
Fair.
well.
Yeah.
So they keep
The
tweaking it, so
Jaguar pattern
I don't
is
even know
tough.
what the 2016 Viper pattern is. So, but to answer the specific question, what would a compelling Harvey to the Dodgers package look like? Would you need Seager back as the top line guy there, or could you do it for
Because Jock Peterson doesn't do it for
Jock
me.
Peterson doesn't do it? Okay.
Yeah, so it's got to be Seager, and you got to have Urias in there, and I need more. I need levels of this thing. I need a lower level guy.
Like Grant Holmes. I'm a big Grant
Like
Holmes fan.
a no, but like I'm saying, I need another prospect down there, and I also need another like major league guy.
Yeah, but use like Enrique Hernandez or something and play him
Yeah,
wherever.
sure. Throw him in there. Yeah. You need like those levels of guys
Get
like
Justin Turner
Lucera
for
in
all
there.
your third second base
Oh
problem.
God,
You can play third too if Wright gets hurt.
he was the most terrifying batter that they faced in the playoffs.
He had a double every single time he was up, it felt like.
Every single time.
Like, it didn't matter. Like, DeGrom, like, the first game against the Dodgers, like, DeGrom, like, the dominant DeGrom start. Like, he
yeah,
just
yeah.
carved
he
up
was
every
roping.
other hitter, and Turner's just roping every ball. Like,
right
what
at
the
Michael
fuck is
Kodaya's
going on?
face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, the pitching market, as first reported on this podcast, is bonkers right now. Our next email is from Liam. Holy crap, it's a long email and it's all one paragraph.
Oof, let's just summarize. Oh, wow,
I don't think it's a question.
Enough.
I don't think it's a question. Liam is happy with the Knees for Walker trade, but only views it as a start, which I think is fair. You have to do more. Otherwise, you're just basically putting the May and June 2015 Mets back on the field next year. It does offer more flexibility to sign a player long-term with Nice's money off the books. What's that about the Diamondbacks?
Grizzlebacks.
The Grizzlebacks. The Grisionbacks, not the Grizzlebacks, or the Godbacks. Godbacks, hashtag. Hashtag Godbacks. And he asked the same question that we just answered about trading Harvey and Thor.
He advocates signing Kazmir. And he says, fuck it, let's just sign Jason Hayward.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good answer. It is.
I agree.
It solves a lot of problems for them.
It really does. It really, really does. But...
And at this point, you know, it's fucking... What, you know, 10 and 250? That gets you to the table, probably. $120 million a year? Who the...
10 and 250 definitely gets you to the table.
I don't know. You might have to end up going higher. Who the... It's... That's going to be a weird...
I don't know. He'll have an opt-out because that seems to be a hot thing.
I don't hate what the Diamondbacks are doing, though. I'll say that.
For competitiveness in this year and the next, you know, I got no problem with that. But they are kind of just burning the farm. Burning the farm. I mean, they sold Tukey, right?
Yeah, which was weird, but whatever.
I mean, whatever.
And, you know, they still have Archie Bradley to plug in. They still have Corbin, of course. You know, I'd say
they weren't a bad team last year.
No, they weren't. You know, they're
like
those moves at worst put them into sort of that, you know, 85 win wild card mix. And the NL West is not, you know, losing Greinke is big for the Dodgers. That's not a deep starting rotation. You don't know where you're going to get from Ryu next year, if anything. You know, maybe yeah. They'll go in hard on Maeda, but it's more of a mid-rotation type, I think, than, you know, who knows with Iwakuma.
The Giants might go after Maeda, and I don't know what the Dodgers are doing.
There's still Cueto, I guess. And I think Cueto's a good fit in that park and in division. And if they were, you know, what they offered Greinke, they could probably sign Cueto for. But, you know, they put, you know, so the thing about it is, look, they gave up a lot to get Shelby Miller. And I'm not convinced Shelby Miller is like a slam dunk number two starter. I'm not.
Me neither.
He doesn't have a long track record sort of doing what he did last year with the K rate that he had. And we know the profile there is, you know, he's a top 10 pick as a prep, if I recall. He's like 6th overall pick or something that year. He's 19th. He was the one that fell. That's right. He was the prep guy that fell that year. Who was that? I don't remember who the high pick was, but I remember that draft being a very good prep arm draft. But yeah, you know, he struck out 2, 4, 5, He said he struck out less. He had essentially a below average strikeout rate last year in the majors. He struck out fewer than 20% of the batters he faced. His walk rate was average-ish. He didn't give up home runs. And he had pretty good BABIP results. And he's had pretty good BABIP results in 2013 and 2014, too. So there might be something there. He was a pretty good pitcher. Basically, what he did in 2015, he also did in 2013. I just don't know if you're getting a slam dunk top of the rotation starter here.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, they gave up a lot to get him. They had some depth in the outfield, from what I understand. So, I mean, it could probably help them this year, but it's a big package.
It is. But I'm going to say this. It's like every single one of us, myself included, looks like a fucking idiot analyzing the Will Myers for James Shields deal 3 years later. I'm at the. It's different when you're on, and of course, the points of analysis we were coming from in whatever the 2013, 2012 offseason. As Mets fans were, oh, you have to collect all the prospects and do, processy things. Because it's a team with a budget with a bad farm system. Arizona is at a different point on the win curve now. They're closer to where the Mets were previous offseason, after the 2014 season. I think it's fair to say. If the Mets had made a similar big deal for a bat, I think we would have been lauding it on the podcast. I know what
Yeah.
the Shelby Miller bat equivalent is. Adam Eaton.
I don't know.
Yeah. But whatever that is, would you have traded? I guess what the equivalent of that is. Rosario, Lagares, and. I think like a top 25 pick or top 50-ish prospect. Would you have traded
I
Matt?
mean, look, I admire the fact that they're going for it.
Right. I mean, they've seen a opportunity in the division to open a window for the next 2 to 3 seasons. I mean, they have Pollock, they have Goldschmidt, they have some decent players elsewhere. They have a pretty good starting rotation now. Ziegler's quietly been one of the best closers in baseball.
I think after the Greinke signing, they have a higher payroll than the Mets.
Everyone has a higher payroll than the Mets. I don't hate it. It might not work, but it beats whatever the Braves are doing. Sure, trying to, tank costs as much as possible to sell the team.
Just
Get
wait,
the
there's going to
highest
be an
point.
SI cover, the 2021 champions.
Yeah. I think this is a good deal for the Braves too. It can work both ways.
Yeah.
Our final email is from David. Dear Jeff and Co. Well, I realize it's now hot stove season. I want to relish a little longer in the glory of our 2015 season. I'm a native New Yorker, now living in Chicago. I was there at Wrigley for Game 3 of the NLCS. My oldest friend from New York came out to watch the game with me. We rooted respectfully for the Mets and were treated with kindness by the Cubs fans. After the Mets handily won the game, we drifted over to the Mets fans congregating behind the first base dugout. There may be 100 of us there, and we finally let loose all the emotions we struggled to contain throughout the game out of respect for the Cubs. Oh, go fuck the Cubs. As each Mets fan arrived, they were greeted by smiles, hugs, and yes, even tears. As one woman wearing a Ron Darling jersey arrived, she acclaimed, "My people, I was all alone throughout the game, and I am overwhelmed to find you all." Without missing a beat, another fan responded, "Like Jews scattered across the desert." It's such a Queens moment. It was a very Mets moment, beautiful in its way. Probably more Long Island than Queens. As we all stood there cheering for our guys, we began reminiscing. Eventually, the conversation turned to what indignities we had to suffer in order to arrive at this wonderful moment. People began saying things like, "This is our reward for enduring Jose Lima," and then the names began to flow as enduring for enduring Jose Jordani Valdesmann, Derek Bell, Anthony Young, Jose Valverde, Frank Francisco, Vince Coleman, Jason Bay, Jeff Duncan, Roberto Alomar, Carlos Baerga, etc. Hebel must have named at least 100 awful Mets. It was more or less an exercise in demon exorcism. This victory seems to have freed us from those awful memories, which now we looked back on with some fondness. My question for you is, which demons would you most like to see exercise? Put another way, which players have been the most difficult for you to root for over the course of your lives as Mets fans? Or which one did you most fret over their presence on the roster? Has the past year made you look back on them with more fondness than bitterness? Or alternatively, will these demons not be fully exercised until the Mets actually win a World Series? Thanks, as always, for keeping this going through the offseason. Best, David.
Luis Castillo.
Castillo's a good one, I feel like. And he wasn't even, like, that awful as a Met.
No, no, but...
like, he was basically just Luis. I mean, I think, like, the last season, you know, the extra year that Omar shouldn't have given him.
Yeah.
He was pretty bad.
And he dropped a pop-up. He dropped a pop-up. That was so bad. Oh.
So his career, like, I mean, he had 366 on base percentage as a Met.
I know.
For 4 seasons. I mean, he was basically Luis Castillo.
Yeah.
And the defense kind of went downhill, too, which was not ideal, but... and he was never healthy. Like, he's every sort of Met from that era. I don't know. I feel like last year, not because of anything the Mets did, but I'm more okay with Jeff Francoeur now. I mean, that started with the whole thing where, you know, like, the one player on the El Paso Chihuahuas convincing him he was deaf. Remember that video?
Yeah.
That's sort of when it started the Jeff Francoeur redemption tour for me.
I feel like no one ever hated Jeff Francoeur because because he's white and he's got a smile and everyone likes that guy because of that.
Well, I think there's, for those of us in the blogosphere, a little bit of consternation with sort of the New York City media being like overly like full on like gaga eyes about everything Jeff Francoeur does.
Like, hey, this Frenchie.
Yeah. Takes naked batting practice. I will never not bring that up when Jeff Francoeur. It's almost like Captain Red Ass, no pun intended. I feel like Mike Sweeney did that too. It's kind of like very Kansas City kind of thing, I think. Dirt dog and whatnot. Valdesman's an interesting one because Valdesman was just always a source of amusement for me, even when he was a prospect.
Yeah, he was a tough guy to root for, but he was never good, so it wasn't that hard to root, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't that hard.
Like Scott Schoenweiss?
You know, Giannis was tough to watch over the years.
Yeah, Scott, but he was a competent major league pitcher.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just, you get tired of four starters after a while, I feel like. You know, Pelfrey and G went through the same thing.
Is the guy who's like, if you got the tickets to the game.
Yeah, exactly. It's John Neese.
You'd be like,
it's a lot of John Neese and Dylan G starts.
Yeah. It was better than G, but it was like,
It's just, especially over the last couple years when it's like, oh, I could be seeing like Harvey or Wheeler or DeGrom, but I'm watching John Neese.
It's going to be a treat next year.
It is. Especially if they sign Bartolo.
Yes. There's no bad game.
There is. Those are your emails. Once again, you can email the podcast at podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. And we kept under an hour. I can't complain.
Hey, not bad.
No, not bad. It's good. I can go write my Baseball Prospectus transaction analysis and watch the season finale of You're the Worst, and I'm good to go.
You just write a transcript of the podcast. There you go.
Yeah, I'm not that lazy. I'm close to that lazy, but I'm not that lazy. Anyway, I got to come up with more obscure cultural references and figure out if Luis Sessa makes my Yankees top 10 list.
Your references are mostly like obscure European literature or
Obscure European
Europe.
literature or film, yes.
Yes, film. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Go with
A
what
lot of them
works.
go right over my head.
I sent you the most proud I've been in my tenure, but the happiest I've been with like the editing notes I've gotten back was when I did the Game 4 NLDS recap about Clayton Kershaw overcoming quote unquote the seventh inning curse or whatever, and called it from Clayton from 5 to 7.
Yeah.
And I forget exactly what Sam wrote back to me, but he's like, this is like the most erudite title suggestion we've ever gotten, which made me feel good because Christina Carl wrote there for many years and she's like a European history scholar. And I just, cheaply reference an Agnes Varda film, but whatever works.
Okay, that's what you were doing.
Yes, I was cheaply referencing an Agnes Varda film. No, there's no punchline, there's no joke.
No, I didn't know what you were referencing. I had
Yeah.
no idea.
It's a, I don't want to say it's a French New Wave film. I think Bardo is slightly, technically speaking, I think Bardo is considered to be a predecessor to the French New Wave style. Her and like film historians have cited Bardo's work as central to the development of the French New Wave film movement. But I think she does slightly predate, of course, and also overlap with it. I don't know if she's actually considered a new wave. Okay, Wikipedia says her work predates the French New Wave, which I knew. Yeah, she's left bank with Marker and Renai. That's what I thought.
Well then.
Yeah, so there's your bit of French film bullshittery for this week. We're not going to do a special Rule 5 podcast tomorrow, so you'll probably just
What
have
if
to.
they pick somebody?
We're still not doing a special Rule 5 podcast tomorrow. We'll fold it into next week's show. I don't think anything else crazy. I don't think I'll. I don't know if I can even bring myself to do something. They sign like Bartolo in the next 24 hours. I should.
I mean, they got our takes right
Yeah. Sign Bartolo. There it is.
it.
They do it, we'll be happy. That's all you need to know.
Yes.
So with that out of the way, we'll see you next week for another edition of Amazing Avenue Audio. Well, we couldn't leave it just there, could we? Shortly after finishing recording with Greg Karam, as often happens during the winter meetings, the Mets made another signing, or a signing. Signing Ezdrubal Cabrera to a 2-year, $18.5 million deal with a team option for year number 3. And I also should point out that we spent most of the podcast with my trying to talk Greg and all of you into the Mets signing Yusmeiro Fatid. And even before the Mets ruined the podcast by signing Ezdrubal Cabrera, the Nationals signed Yusmeiro Petit. So talk about those things, clean up a couple emails, maybe get into a little bit of winter meetings roundup. It's Milo Tybee. Milo,
Hello.
what are your feelings on Ezdrubal Cabrera? I spit them all over Twitter shortly after he signed. Everyone like retweeted like my initial overreaction to him not being as good as Tejada, which, yeah, fair enough. I immediately clarified for the next like 2 days, everybody just like responded or retweeted that one. The first in like a 16 Twitter tweet rant about Ezdrubal Cabrera.
I'm lukewarm about the signing. I think it's okay. I think it's less of a slam dunk than the Neil Walker acquisition. I like that it doesn't cost a draft pick. I don't like so much that it's a multi-year commitment, but I suppose that's the price for a middle infielder on such a bear market. And I think it's interesting that we've got this kind of glut of middle infield options at this point, with Flores and Tejada kind of seemingly expendable at this point.
Well, I think the plan was very much to get another middle infielder in there just to give them depth. I think maybe we thought it was going to be Kelly Johnson, because he's more of a, not a natural third baseman, but has more experience playing third base than Tejada or Walker or even Flores at this point. But instead they went for a shortstop, in air quotes or reverse commas, whatever you want to call it.
A poor defensive shortstop.
Yes. That was the implication, yes. Which allows them to, I mean, I guess, slide over Tejada if, or excuse me, slide over Flores if Wright gets hurt, if and when Wright can't play. And at the same time, you know, if they wanted to do a strict platoon and only play Flores at shortstop against lefties, I guess they could do that as well. Though if you look at it, Cabrera doesn't have much of a split, so they'd probably be better off platooning Flores with Walker, since Walker has a more pronounced split and is worse against lefties overall than Cabrera is. I just don't trust Terry Collins to platoon either of them, frankly, because they're veterans, and he doesn't platoon veterans.
Right. I've read various takes on how this impacts Flores from, he becomes the new infield super sub to he's now floated in trade talks, which I think is pretty unlikely given his recent injury. I'm interested to see how this impacts Tejada, if the club really regrets extending him for another season instead of non-tendering him over the offseason.
I mean, they could always cut him in spring training and pay him the league minimum, because it's not a fully guaranteed deal. B, they could probably move him on a one-year, $2.5 million contract to someone, you know, not for anything significant, maybe for a 40-man spot, essentially, in a flyer, if they wanted to go in that direction. But I think they're just going to keep all of them. I think that's essentially your infield depth for 2016. Because Kadire, they don't really have a first baseman. Kadire is going to take the first base reps, I'm sure.
Right.
With Duda against the tough lefties here and there. And then you have essentially three infielders in Cabrera, Flores, and Tejada that can play second, third, and short.
Right. Well, the acquisition of Cabrera avoids, the competition of just Tejada, Reynolds, and Flores for the starting job, which I think was the same scenario that played out last spring training.
Sure.
So if anything, you bring some solidarity to the position. But his Cabrera's lack of defensive aptitude as shortstop is going to be a concern for sure.
So here's my main problem with the deal. Like, I understand the reasoning behind it. And let's look. The Mets front office was interested in Cabrera last offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get him. They sort of, I guess, finally got their man, as it were. And it cost him a multi-year deal. He's coming off a better season than he was coming off 2014. That's why he had to take a one-year deal with the Rays in the first place. So I think my main issue is, and look, Cabrera, by the numbers, is a better version of Wilmer Flores.
Right.
He's a bad defensive shortstop, probably a better defensive shortstop than Flores. He's a league average-ish hitter, slugging heavy. Very similar to Flores. He's like a 15 home run guy that doesn't really walk all that much. That's very similar to the Flores profile. It's better than Flores, who I think was going to be the incumbent going into 2016 otherwise. Is it $18 million better over 2 years, considering that Flores will be 25 and Cabrera will be 30? I don't know that I see it. And for a team that has very real budgetary constraints, is that the best use of that much guaranteed money?
It's a good point. It leads me to question whether they are actually done in free agency, so to speak. Just how much this $18+ million contract hampers their ability to go out and sign a Denard Span or someone of that caliber.
I don't think they're done, but I don't think they still have needs they need to fill, but they're not going to be filling it with players will be making more guaranteed money than as Yuval Cabrera in all likelihood. I'm bearish on their ability to sign Span on a 2-year deal. Not because they can't come up with 228 or something like that. I think they probably could. I don't know if he'd be inclined to take that from them specifically. Mm-hmm. Given that, and if he wants a 1-year deal to try to hit the market again, that's even more complicated because he's probably not going to be a full-time player with Lagares there.
Yeah, he's a guy who given just how relatively little he played last season, it seems like a prototypical option for a 1-year incentive-laden contract just to build up his market value, then test the market again. But Scott Boras being his agent doesn't seem to coincide with that idea. Sure, so I could see him, yeah.
He seems like a guy that gets like 112 or 345. I don't think the Mets will give him the latter. I don't know if he'd take the Mets offer on the former.
Well, especially if they're only planning on signing a guy to platoon with Lagares, which is what I most recently read.
And that's what it comes down to, is how much have they... Now, this team is better than it was a week ago. Mm-hmm. Adding Walker and Cabrera. Is this team, as currently constructed, better than the team that was on the field in the second half of 2015? I don't know. I mean, there was a 90-something win pace that they played at for those 2.5 months-ish, 10 weeks. So they don't have to be that good next year again, theoretically, but I don't know that they're going to reach those heights. When you compare them to the Cubs, for example, and the Cubs and Mets have had very similar tracks over the last few years. You know, both teams brought in new GMs to sort of rebuild from the ground up, build up the farm system, not spend a lot of money. In the Mets, out of necessity. In the Cubs' case, probably not out of necessity, but it was a conscious effort not to take on long-term money, certainly, for the last few years. And then when the time came, you know, last offseason, the Cubs went out and got John Lester. The Mets signed Michael Kadire, and then a bunch of cool things happened. And then coming off that, you know, the Cubs have gone out and gotten Jason Hayward. They've gone out and gotten Ben Zobrist. You know, they might still move Jorge Soler or someone of that ilk. Schwarber, even. I don't think, probably not Schwarber. But they could, with Hayward in the fold, now move Schwarber to get a frontline starting pitcher. The Mets have, you know, traded Daniel Murphy for Neil Walker, John Neese for somebody, and Yuval Cabrera for Wilmer Flores.
Right, and the Hayward development, I mean, I could be wrong. I never heard the Mets named in connection with Hayward on any sort of rumor, so I...
No, all the beats pretty much said they were never particularly interested.
Right. It is disappointing, though, because, even if they don't move a Soler or a Schwarber for a frontline starter, they did also sign John Lackey.
Right, I forgot that.
So it seems like they've made those patchwork moves in addition to the big blockbuster signings like a Hayward.
And I get the NL Central is going to be more competitive than the NL East next year. But I see a lot of Mets fans on Twitter like poo-pooing the Cubs as like, you know, oh, just another 2015 Nationals. Well, you know, sometimes that really works. Usually it does. And if you think they're 2015 Nationals, you have to pay attention to what happened with the 2015 Nationals. And what's going to go wrong? What went wrong with the Nationals was old players collapsing, essentially, in addition to a lot of injuries. Now, a lot of injuries is the thing that can happen to the Cubs. That's all young, pre-prime talent there. The kind of players, as a whole, you'd expect to get better next year. Now, look, could the Mets still beat them in a short series if they get there? Sure, it's a short series. Anything can happen in 4 games. You want to put the best team on the field for 162. And right now, on December 11th, are the Mets the favorites in the NL East? Probably. I don't feel particularly confident about it. I mean, the Nationals have done some stuff to shore up their bullpen. And I'm not just referring to Yusmeiro Petit. And the Petit contract is funny to me. So I was thinking, like, what would I sign? What if I had to get Yusmeiro Petit on this team, what would I offer him? I'd like probably like a 1 year, $3 million deal with an option, which is what the Nationals ended up giving him. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, if you're giving out, if a major league team is giving out the same contract I would for Yusmeiro Petit, they might be overpaying.
Right. They also signed Sean Kelly and Oliver Perez. Two moves to really bolster their depth in the bullpen. The only reason I would be skeptical about them catching the Mets in the NL East is they've lost so much via free agency. Jordan Zimmermann walked. Ian Desmond presumably is going to walk. Those are two pieces that I don't think are very easy to just cover.
Traded Escobar also, I mean, as well.
Replacing Matt Williams with Dusty Baker.
Very much a lateral move.
Understated.
I mean, it's just disheartening. I think we all knew this is kind of what was going to happen, or something like it, going into the offseason. They're at around $105 million right now. I mean, even if they were to sign Span and someone like Cologne, that gets them to 120, but it's not a very inspiring $120 million payroll even at that point. I mean, I guess on your face you can say, well, they spent
it's
more
definitely
money.
Not. Right, I'm sure it was deflating to an extent to the fan base to hear that that we are just out on Cespedes, but that's not a possibility seemingly. So that coupled with Hayward's signing to the Cubs is a little bit of a kick to the pants.
Right, we're at the point now where they're really the only place they can make an upgrade is center field. They're kind of locked in for 2016 otherwise. I mean, they could go out and get like a real fifth starting pitcher. Like a kind of guy that commands a multi-year deal. But that market is insane right now. Just look at what Mike Leake's probably going to end up getting from the Nationals.
Right. What are has the market cooled or not the market? Have negotiations with Bartolo Colon cooled? Because it seemed like a deal was imminent.
I think that's just a function of everyone being in the same place for winter meetings. Things tend
same
to
place, same time.
Yeah. If stuff doesn't happen in the next week or so, it usually cools down. It like shuts down. Baseball shuts down for 2 weeks after that. So you'll see a couple deals / trades probably trickle in over the next 7-8 days, and then everything will shut down till January. So they might get a deal done before then, they might not. It sounds like there's a lot of interest in Bartolo Colon, as there should be.
Yeah, certainly. If he's willing to come back on a moderately inexpensive 1 or 2 year deal, I don't see how the Mets can't be interested.
Yeah, I mean, unless they decide to like really go with like, I'll just go with Logan Barrett.
Also depends how serious they are about Rafael Montero. I mean, I know they mentioned
have no
him
idea.
As an in-house
I guess he
option,
is finally. That's the other thing that happened shortly after the podcast recording session with Greg ended is they announced that Montero is going to start in winter ball next week. So we'll see. I don't think it's one of the
worth track.
I don't know if it's. I don't think it's one of the Dominican Winter League teams I can regularly watch on internet streaming. I think it was like Escogido or something. I'll have to wait until they play like Lice, because I can usually get those games. I think Toros del Este I can get occasionally too.
A bit off the radar, but do you think Matt Bowman would have been an in-house option? I know.
No.
Keith Law was saying how the Mets should have protected him prior to the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, Keith Law thinks he has 5 average or better pitches, and he doesn't, so. Though he's not the only one, you know. Paul DePodesta said at a media hit recently he's like the 3rd best pitching prospect in the system. Which is funny, because they just did not bother to protect him for the Rule 5 then. Which says more about the system than anything else right now in terms of pitching depth.
Mm.
Matt Bowman is more Chris Schwinden than Dylan G. If you want recent fifth startery types.
Did he ever bounce back to the major leagues after being with like 4 different organizations in one year?
I don't
year?
Think so. Schwinden? I can look. I have looked at his Baseball Reference page probably within the last 18 months, but I would guess. I don't remember offhand where he ended up after that. Let's see.
The unsponsored Chris Schwinden's Baseball Reference page.
Looks like he pitched really well in independent ball in 2014 and got a brief cup of coffee with the Rangers, AAA affiliate in Round Rock, got shelled, and has not played professional baseball as far as BREF can tell in 2015.
Pitched to a tidy 12.46 ERA in, for the Mets in 2012.
I'm sure he pitched for them at some point. I don't remember any of those appearances. Lost to the ages. We also got a couple emails in the last 36 hours or so the heck, we'll dispatch with those too. Unsurprisingly, there's another Irish soccer email. It is from Bob. Dear Jeffrey at Acopolis, first things first, best Republic of Ireland player, Johnny Giles. Liam Brady second with sublime, but lack Giles' steeliness. I'd put Roy Keane third. The title of this email is, how could you not mention Johnny Giles? The reason I could not or did not mention Johnny Giles, Bob, is because his Republic of Ireland career ended 3 years before I was born. But I will take your word for it. I would also say that I could have made a joke here that I won't give credit to anyone that played for that West Yorkshire club, but that's not entirely true. He goes on, I have read that Cabrera is not an upgrade over Wilmer at shortstop. That was probably me on Twitter. Is that really true, or will he herald an end to shortstop Avenue Audio, at least for a while? I mean, we covered this. He's an upgrade, but probably not a significant one, and maybe not one by 2017, depending on how Flores progresses with the bat. On last week's show, you mentioned the Mets are leaving Binghamton. I know things are a little busy with the Major League Club. I'd like to know a bit more about that situation, unless it is just the usual Wilpon pisses off yet more people. Anyways, I really enjoy getting my excellent fix of weekly Mets insights. Keep up the good work. Bob in Bidenden, which is in the United Kingdom, near but not part of London. I mean, there's the whole lawsuit with Wilmington that they're still working out, but in all likelihood, it will end up with the B-Mets as currently constituted playing in Wilmington at some point in the near future, essentially. Whether that remains, I should say whether that's as soon as 2017, I don't know. That is probably how that will work out. Other emails from Jimmy. We get an off-season Josh Satin watch. Love the pod. Hashtag love the pod. Josh Satin has surfaced. He's playing for Toros del Este in the Dominican Winter League. Has gone 0-9 with one walk so far. I don't know where he'll end up. I'm curious.
Where will the Josh Satin sweepstakes lead us?
Japan? He seems like the guy that we'd like to say, I'll go play in Japan for a year or two. And his skill set would probably fit pretty well there, actually.
Right. Kind of a bummer he didn't get at least a September call-up for the Reds.
I think they actually let him go sometime in August, if I remember correctly. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he was Josh Satin-y for them in AAA.
704 OPS.
Yeah, 280 with a high walk rate and not much power.
Right.
But he always does in AAA.
Josh Satin and Chris Schwinden of Unsponsored Baseball Reference page fame.
Oh, is my Josh Satin Baseball Reference page sponsorship lapsed?
Available.
Is it available? I didn't know that it lapsed. Check my account. How is it going to cost me to renew it? Let's see. Why didn't it just say it on the main page? Usually it says you can sponsor this for X number of dollars. It was cheap for a while, but once he got a couple years in the majors, they jacked it up on me.
Interest builds up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you mentioned, him receiving 190 at-bats is something I'm sure happened, but I've got no recollection of it.
You remember that? He was like their main first base bat down the stretch that season.
It's like a Jason Phillips type year.
Yeah.
First stretch he was the everyday, right?
Wasn't that 2013? It was the year he got all those bats? Yeah. What the heck? Let me log in. I remember I logged in a bunch of times with the wrong login. No, not that one either. It's riveting radio. There we go. Let me look. So when did my Josh Satin player page expire? Wow, it expired like almost 2 years ago. It's bad on me. I've not been paying attention at all. It is only $20. Yeah, I'll take care of that.
$20 well spent.
Yeah, my Christmas present to Baseball Reference. It's re-sponsoring Josh Satin's Baseball Reference page.
A bit after the fact, but did is Drubal Cabrera's stint with the Nationals in 2014 leave any impressions with you?
Not really. He was mostly like playing second base and backing up for them. Like, yeah. Was he even a regular, semi-regular? Like, I know he played for them. I remember the trade vaguely, but
I looked over some highlights of that. Of that stint, and one of the home runs he hit was off Jerry's Familia, which is moderately impressive.
That's like an interesting factoid.
Yeah.
I will say that Steamer projection for Josh Satin in 2016 is 244, 325, 383. Which I'm going to guess is better than Eric Campbell's. Just saying. That's good. I don't think we need to do more than that. I don't really call this a full double feature. We just need an addendum.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty confident that nothing will happen after I actually hit stop on the recording button this time. So I can get this episode up. I suppose it spaces them out a little nicer after the winter meetings preview.
Right.
I guess we should talk about the Rule 5 stuff. We already sort of briefly mentioned Matt Bowman. I don't really have anything to say about Octavio Acosta or Alfredo Reyes, even though I've seen a fair amount of both of them.
Sigh of relief for not losing Becerra?
Yeah, I pretty much talked myself into the fact they weren't going to lose him in the last week or so,
realistically. Phillies took Tyler Goodell, who's probably going to have a shot to break as a starting outfielder on that team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, they'll keep him for 162 games. Will not be hard to do.
Yeah, him and Altair are probably going to be on the corners of that outfield.
I like to say they have the inside track of the number one pick, but they really don't.
Yep.
It'd be tough to beat the Braves, especially if they move in Ciarte.
Right, they just dealt.
And not even that Ciarte is that great a hitter, but he is a major league quality hitter.
Yeah, someone floated the idea of... the Mets making a play for Inciarte to platoon with Lagares, that would be
a good fit. Yeah. I don't know if the Braves would do that in the division.
Yeah, but it's a little bit lower stakes, I would probably guess, than their hesitancy to deal Andrelton Simmons.
I'm trying to think if the Mets have any Georgians in places in the majors Wheeler. Right now. Yeah, Wheeler. I don't think they trade Wheeler for Inciarte, though. I can't think of any of those prospects are from Georgia. I don't think any of them are, really. Gazelman's a Southern California guy. Cicchini's from Louisiana. Smith's Southern Cal. Nimmo's Wyoming. Basically everyone else is a Venezuelan teenager. I guess Lindsay's from Florida, but that's not Georgia. It's not the same. And they already traded them Gant, so... Yeah, and Ciarte would definitely fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and basically a league average hitter and a very good defender, so.
He himself a Rule 5 draft pick at one point.
Yes, the Phillies had him and sent him back.
Yep.
That covers your Rule 5 stuff. Now I feel like we've definitely covered the winter meetings, which are never as exciting as I think they're going to be. Especially when, you know, you root for a team with onerous financial limitations.
Anticlimactic at points.
Yeah. But we'll probably be back next week for at least one more show before some sort of holiday break. I've toyed with the idea of doing another holiday special, but I don't really. I kind of like burnt that candle at both ends last year with 2.5 hours on everything I would talk about this year. I don't just want to go into repeats. So if I come up with something interesting, I'll do a holiday special. Otherwise, we'll do an episode next week about general Mets related stuff. And then we'll see you in 2016. I remember to change the date on the metadata of the podcast. It usually takes me 3 or 4 episodes to remember to do that. But until then, we'll see you again on Amazing Avenue Audio. For real this time. Oh, for fuck's sake. So, less than 30 minutes after I finished recording that segment with Milo, Michael Kadire retired. So, to talk about that briefly, it's Kate Feldman. Hi, Kate. How's it going?
I'm tired. How are you?
I am tired of this podcast. Not tired specifically, but, well, not tired generally, but tired specifically of this podcast. All right.
So, I'm tired of both of them.
It's not strictly an LOL Mets moment because they don't have anything to do with the Mets MLB.com transactions page. But it's still funny that this was just sort of dumped out there randomly on a Friday night. And that someone from Mets Twitter, of course, found it on a Friday night.
Of course, because what else are they good for?
You got to keep track of, they might have possibly signed a minor league free agent and not announced it in the last 24 hours. Got to check on that.
Or Cespedes, you know. Hmm.
So after it was deleted because some production assistant probably posted it before they were supposed to. I think they just probably got the paperwork filed today or whatever. So there was no checks and balances there. It got deleted. And then David Wright finally started answering beat writers' texts, probably. That's how that went down. And they got it confirmed that he is, in fact, retiring.
I don't remember who it was, but someone questioned whether it was like individual responses or a group text. And I'm just picturing him. Just like he has just like a group in his like... on his phone, and he just goes, yeah, it's done.
So I can just see it being like David's phone like blowing up on a Friday night when he's out with his wife or something. He's just texting right. He's just texting them back, new phone, who dis? Like everyone.
Oh no. I've had that song stuck in my head for a week and I had finally gotten it out, so thank you for that.
No problem. So Michael Kadire is no longer a Met.
I know.
Functionally, this means they clear at least part of, probably most of, his $11 million that he was due in... Oh, it's more than that, isn't it? It's like 13...
12.5.
12.5, Jesus, okay.
It was a lot of money.
It was. They did backload it a little bit, too. So I'm guessing after some sort of buyout, this would be close to a wash with whatever they're paying Asdrubal Cabrera. So we're really just back where we started.
It could be worse.
They literally have the same payroll they had... once everyone was declared a free agent, which could be good. They could go out and get more players now. They're going to need to get a ready bat for the outfield, probably.
We still need some relievers.
They need some relievers. Maybe something. All the things we've talked about in the first two segments of the show.
I'm assuming so.
They're not even segments. They're kind of separate podcasts. I don't know what they are. I'm just very tired of talking about this. So what's your favorite Michael Kadire memory?
Honestly, it's, like, not even baseball. I loved the magic. Like, and everyone made fun of him for that. But I just loved Michael Kadire, like, doing magic for kids in the Mets clubhouse.
I like them using him as the Mets Fedora Day model. Like, oh my God, of all the players they could have gotten, they got, like the guy that looks most like an old, creepy divorced dad in a fedora to do the print ads for it.
I got that fedora like 3 months after their promotion, and I'm looking at it right now. I forgot I had it.
See, I think, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's a... I mean, look, did I own a fedora in college? I must have.
I feel like you probably did.
I definitely had a bowler. I'm guessing I probably had a fedora my freshman year at Hampshire. certainly. I could go back and probably confirm that. There's video evidence, but yeah. But it's just, I can't, like, I feel like women can pull off fedoras as, like, sort of like a His Girl Friday kind of thing.
I
have never seen a dude that looks good in a fedora since literally the 40s.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking Jay Horowitz probably could. Like, honestly, probably could pull it off. Oh my goodness. I'm looking at these photos now.
Of Michael Kadir on a fedora, I hope, not me. Fedora. They're not out there on the internet. That would be bad.
Yeah, I'm really good at Googling. It was really quick. Because half of them are him and half of them are just hipsters in fedora.
Right, sure, of course.
You know.
I mean, some of them are probably pork pies, but I just do not in any way, shape, or form care about that distinction.
Yeah. They are just here. And then there's casually one of Ruben, just like chilling in there. So.
What should the Mets spend this money on? What's your top priority now?
I just want to say go out and get that big bat. You just cleared $10 million.
Yes.
They're
back roughly
concern,
at 92, 93 million probably.
Yeah, but my concern is that maybe this now will actually get us a decent bat. As opposed to, you know, I don't even know numbers at this point. But, you know, will they get us two relievers instead of one? And that's what they're going to spend the money on.
Yeah, slightly better starting pitcher.
Bartolo. I mean, it's just going to be Colon.
It's just going to be Bartolo, yeah.
It has to be Bartolo. They can't let us have that.
It's just been like the most Mets Twittery night with the Kadir thing.
I feel bad for the guy. I really do. Like, he's played 15 years, and he's going to end his, you know, major league playing career because some intern, like, pressed a button too soon.
But by the same token, in a weird way, it's probably redeemed him in the eyes of certain Mets fans.
Yeah, I will give you that.
Because we're so payroll conscious. This is, like, the best thing he probably could have done for us as a fan base in 2016.
Taking one for the team.
But he's had a really good career.
He has.
He made a couple of All-Star games, got some MVP votes.
He'll get some Hall of Fame votes, I'm sure, from...
Oh, yeah, he was great to the media, too, so he'll definitely get some Hall of Fame votes.
I didn't prep enough for this. One of the beats, I don't remember who, said that he had talked to some front office staff about coaching, and I would have no problem with that. I feel like that would be great for him.
I guess. I have a philosophical problem with way too many, like, coaching and managerial jobs just getting handed to recently retired dudes that don't really have any coaching experience. Like, maybe Michael Kadir would be a great assistant hitting coach. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he's getting, you know, brought in to replace Bob Guerin on the bench, but... You know, you bring him to spring training, you see what he can do, at least.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he's made more than enough money in his career where he doesn't have to, you know, go to Brooklyn and manage this year or anything if he doesn't want to.
Right. The poor guy could just want some time off.
Yeah. He's made $79 million in his playing career, plus whatever he gets from the Mets as a buyout.
Oh, I hate money.
And he never even really got a big deal. He got, like, the 3-year deal... From the, looks like he got some sort of extension from the Twins at some point. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Well, hang on, I can probably figure this out. His first, 8/41/35. No, he was just a regular, looks like a regular Super 2. 1, 2, 3, 4. No, there's no way he's a Super 2. Yeah, they must have extended him at some point.
Yeah, there has to be something. That's too many. It's too long.
And then a 3-year deal from the Rockies and the 2-year deal from the Mets. So he never really got a big payday.
No, he kept a, you know, 10-5 for those 3 years in Colorado. And sadly, that's not that much.
It really isn't.
Especially for what he was hitting there. But, you know, like you said, he had a good career. It didn't work out too great here. But...
I do like that his Marcel projection for 2016 is 283, 336, 458. I don't think that was happening.
Where is that? No. Like, who? I hadn't noticed that, actually.
It's just a 5-3-1 plus a naging factor. It's like the simplest projection you can.
Right, but.
But still, yeah. That would be like actually like an everyday player. Like a good everyday corner outfielder in City Field.
All right, maybe it's supposed to be Confortos and they like mixed them up. I don't know. Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. Except now I'm going, well, what if it was? What if he retired?
He's about to he's retiring because his knee is just completely shot. Or his hip, whatever it was. Whatever part of his body is.
I'm sure most of it, honestly. The guy's always in his 30s. He's 36 already.
Steamer has him at 252, 306, 400, which seems more reasonable.
I hate to say that even that sounds ambitious. That's probably
a little high. It is replacement level in a corner outfield spot, so.
All right. Now it's even more. They have to go and get that bat. And now, actually, what do we have for a Duda backup?
Oh, you can find a right-handed first place platoon. I mean, Flores could play there. He's played a fair amount of first base in Double A, but that's the kind of guy you can find a right-handed corner outfield.
Yeah.
First base type. Free agent. I don't think they really have anyone.
That's the thing. I mean,
internally that I can think of. I'm like thinking in my head, but like who is AAA? There's really nobody.
I mean, I don't think Cabrera has ever touched first in his career.
No, neither has Tata. But Flores has played there a decent amount, and again, that's the kind of guy you can like whatever.
Yeah, worst comes to worst.
It's the most like whatever. Take a look, see who's available. Yeah.
That was like his redeeming quality for 2016 was he could take over first if he had to.
Steven Pierce probably makes the most sense because he's got first base and outfield experience.
Yeah. What is
right-handed.
He expected to go for? I don't even know, like money-wise.
I don't know. I can honestly say I did not follow with much closeness the Steven Pierce free agent market before today.
I didn't until about 30 seconds ago, so you still beat me.
He's coming off a terrible season with Baltimore, so I think he'll probably be gettable on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
But let's see, even last year...
How is he 32 already? Is that just me?
Steven Pierce?
Yeah.
I have no frame of reference for Steven Pierce.
I don't either. I just did not think he'd been around for that long.
He had a weird reverse split last year, but I feel like for his career, he's a pretty good lefty masher. Let's see. Yeah, 824 OPS against lefties.
That'll play if you need to.
It's not entirely particularly inspiring. It's more John Mayberry-ish, but...
Oh, see, you just jinxed it, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's closer to John Mayberry than... It's not a position you want to spend a lot of money on anyway, so I don't have a huge problem with it.
Like, I don't want someone, you know, I don't want them signing someone because they also can play first base. I just kind of want to left ditch, you know, throw him out there if something happens, an emergency. Also, everyone I've looked up on VRF lately is from Florida, and it makes me sad.
Most baseball players are, so...
It makes me very sad. I'm sorry to everyone in the country for Florida.
So that's it, I think. I think we're really for real done now.
Yeah. Michael Kadire, it was an adventure.
It was. You did magic tricks and wore unfortunate hats.
And for that, we thank you.
And was really, really bad in game one of the NLDS.
Oh, God. That's terrible. That's what he's going to be remembered for with the Mets.
Yeah. You know, it can't all be... It can't all be like...
Murph?
Yeah. You can't always go off with a whine. Not that plenty of Mets Twitter remember him for the errors and his underperformance in the World Series. Trust me on that.
Oh, goodness. Well, I wish him well. He will never hear this, but I hope he enjoys the rest of his life.
I think it'll probably be a pretty good one, so.
I would think so. He's got, a couple $1 million, so I'll probably be fine.
He can hang out in Virginia and,
Hey, he can go back to teaching. That actually was my favorite Michael Kadire thing. He substituted at his high school when he was with the Twins in the summer, or in the winter.
Oh, that's actually interesting. I figured it'd be like, I know some like minor leaguers will sometimes substitute teach as like an off-season job.
Yeah, this I don't remember where I saw this. It was one of those stories. And he, because he was bored in the off-season, and he would go back to the club. And I just loved that.
It's not quite as cool as Mike Pelfrey just randomly barnstorming slow-pitch softball games in the off-season. Apparently he's like an amazing slow-pitch softball hitter.
That's kind of fantastic. I didn't know that.
You know, there's two things I know about Mike Pelfrey outside of, you know, that he's a mediocre pitcher, is that he barnstorms and like kills. He's like a slow pitch softball ringer, and like the field goal kicking story from Ari Dickey's book. That's about it.
Oh my God. I was trying to explain Ari Dickey to a completely non-baseball friend the other day, and it didn't work at all. I was like, I don't know, he like climbs mountains and writes books and throws pitches that nobody throws. Just like, what does that even mean?
The Mike Pelfrey, R.A. Dickey, like, BFF thing was always an amusing subplot of those Mets teams, too.
Oh, goodness. This team. Well, if they can turn this money around and actually sign a player that we need, I will consider Michael Kadire's Mets tenure a success. How about that?
Works for me. That is probably an overly optimistic note on which to end the podcast, but it's what we're going to end the podcast with, because I'm tired of this podcast, and we will see you next week for another edition of Amazing Avenue Audio.
Wherever you're heading this Christmas, celebrate your Christmas journey with McDonald's. And the perfect song for a festive car sing-along. Head to mcdonalds.co.uk and upload a video of yours for a chance to star in the McDonald's Christmas TV ad. McDonald's. Let's celebrate all your Christmas journeys.